Bioshock Chapter 5. So here I am on the bottom of the ocean in a city run by a madman looking for honeybee saliva. If I told someone a month ago on the surface what I'd be doing right now, he'd probably ask how to score what I was currently smoking. I got to the apiary and just in time to see the downsides of working with stinging insects. Seems that honeybees trapped in a confined, pressurized environment tend to get a little territorial and hostile, as evidenced by the sight of one of Ryan Splicer's getting stung to death by a small swarm of the bugs. I hightailed it back several steps, waiting for the yelling to die down. As I did, it occurred to me that I had no idea whatsoever how to collect honeybee saliva. Time to get a doctor's opinion. Langford, you out there? Until I get those supplies, my social calendar is rather clear, as he said in a sardonic tone. Good. Mind telling me what I have to do to get honeybee spit? I missed the day they covered that in engineering classes. Oh, all right. The hives are set up to extract the saliva while the hives are being made or repaired. You'll find the collectors at the bottom of the hives, refined. Get all you can from the hives. There should be enough to make the vector. How will I know when I'm done? When you've checked all the hives. There's only 26 of them. Just open the panel marked Specimen Collection and remove the containers. The original caretakers are likely beyond caring whether you replace the containers or not, so just get them and go. Why collect spit at all? Research. Experiments were carried out to increase the yield of honey, make pollination more efficient, and make it easier to breed queens through royal jelly. Now enough questions. The air isn't getting any fresher. Oh, I have one more. It had better be important. How do I collect the stuff without getting stung to death? I can see how that would be important. The apiary's smoke dispersal system should still be operational. Activate the lever outside the main section. It'll disperse a smoke that will make the bees lethargic. Then you can go in and collect the substance without getting stung. For how long? Oh, 30 seconds. That long! If you hurry, you should only need to use it, seven or eight times. Be right back, Doc. I put the radio away inside. It doesn't get any easier, does it? By the time I got back to the apiary, the splicer was dead and the bees had moved on. I got closer and, out of habit, checked the body for useful items. A few bullets, knee hypo, and a container of chlorophyll. At least he was good for something. I entered the apiary and couldn't help but admire the setup. A front counter for goods, and behind it, a large section with about 30 beehives with vents all over the upper walls, clearly to allow free passage to all of Arcadia to the bees there. Smack dab in the middle of the outer chamber, a switch to set off the smokers to pacify the bees. Ah yes, the bees. They were swarming around the middle of the inner chamber. I could see them through the reinforced windows. Ryan's gas attack must have riled him up something fierce, which means that if I were caught in there when the smoke wore off, I was going to go out a pincushion. I suddenly wondered if I was allergic to bee stings. Never been stung before. Well, now would be a really bad time to find out. I hit the lever and a surprisingly loud chime went off. The bees began to waver and then return to their hives. I took off towards the hives as soon as I dared, counting off the seconds as I found the small petri dishes and closed them, then put them into my bag. And that's when the splicers started to show up. I cursed myself, an idiot. That chime could have probably been heard in every vent throughout Arcadia. I just rang the damn dinner bell! The ticking sound of the clock was winding down, and I ran for the safety of the outer chamber just in time. The crazed screaming of the splicers attracted the bees, and they charged out to defend their hives, attacking the splicers with a vengeance. I ran to a corner and hauled out the shotgun, ready to fire at anyone who came into the apiary or tried to leave it. I got lucky. That group of splicers was too busy getting stunned to worry about me. It wasn't long before the last of them had fallen. But that left me with a problem. I wasn't done here, not by half. And every time I put the bees to sleep, that chime would wake up the neighbors and it'd be sudden death rodeo all over again. There has to be a way. Wait a minute. How did the people that worked here avoid getting stung? I looked around carefully, then smiled as I found what I was looking for in a storage crate. Bingo. I turn to the hives. Now we're smoking. It worked like a dream. I shuffled my way through the apiary, suppressing the urge to whistle as I collected the petri dishes, putting them into my pack. The bees buzzed angrily around me, but thanks to finding one of the beekeeper's outfits, all they could do was buzz. A few splicers came by, checking to see if there was anything left to me. All I had to do was move to the far end of the chamber. As soon as they saw me in the outfit, they barreled straight in and were attacked by the swarm instantly, dropping them before they could even get close. Enjoy while it lasts, buddy. You have to leave the bees sometime. I searched the last of the hives and walked out of the apiary, brushing the bees off as I did. Next thing to pick up on the shopping list, distilled water. I'd found an audio vox earlier about some wine critic complaining about the wine being watered down over at Worley's Winery, even if the water was distilled, not taken directly from the ocean. Sounds like the best place in Rapture to wet the old whistle. I retract my previous statement. As soon as I got to the area, I found two turrets and a security camera covering the area. That'll teach me to walk into some place in the Rapture I ain't been before and expect a friendly welcome. It took a little doing, but I managed to persuade the hostile machinery to see me as a friend instead of a foe. I quickly found the reason for the security. They were covering a safe. After hacking the nearby health station, I set about my task, picking up bottles of distilled water where I could find them. I also found a big daddy walking the halls, following a little sister. Okay, need to do this smart. Hacked the safe, found some money and ammo, put the bottles of precious water into the safe to protect them, and so it wouldn't weigh me down for what I was about to do next. Waited for it to get close, and four splicers rushed in, either seeing an easy target or were desperate enough to take on one of those monsters. Well, that put them within sight of the security camera, who immediately called the local Fuzz, who started shooting at the splicers. Next thing you know, a few stray shots from the bots hit the Big Daddy. It starts attacking the bots and the splicers, which brought the turrets into the fight. I just hunkered down behind the counter and waited for the floor to stop bouncing. The shooting finally stopped, and I got up to admire the spectacle of it all. Two splicers tried to use the health station and got faces full of poison gas. Four security bots are what was left of them. The Big Daddy, sitting on the floor, lights out the bodies of the other two splicers next to it. The little sister crying next to the Big Daddy. I rushed over to her, using the plasmid Tenenbaum gave me to exorcise the slug from her, and personally carried her to a vent. Never a time when that wasn't worth it. God, was I starting to get used to this? No, of course not. Experience with dealing with the Big Daddies and splicers. That was all it was. Honest. I ran back to the farmer's market. I had almost everything I needed to fix the trees and everything else in Arcadia. When I got back, I saw that there had been some visitors to the market in my absence. Quite a few of them. And they had all walked into the wrong room. Between the hacked camera, the machine gun turrets, and the rocket turret down the hall, the place looked like a well-dressed war zone. I counted 11 bodies, including another Big Daddy. Sure enough, there's a little sister hiding behind the counter. Easy there, kid. I'm one of the good guys, I whispered. But she was as determined as the others to get away from me now that the Big Daddy was down. She kicked up more of a fight, though, and I had to fight her a little bit to keep her still long enough to use the plasmid on her. But she got rid of the slug. Need a little help. That slug was a big monster. As she coughed up the rest of the atom, I looked down at her. Blonde hair, cute as a button, especially now that her skin was becoming the right color and her eyes weren't glowing that dull yellow anymore. I wiped her lips with a clean handkerchief and smiled. If you need a rest, rest. I'll make sure no one bothers you, kid. She looked at me with those big, wide blue eyes and just curled up into my side. Jeez. God knows what this kid has been through. I put an arm around her to help keep her from the cold and looked down at her. My name's Mark. She looked up at me with those big eyes. I'm Sally. I smiled in a way I hoped was reassuring. I'm very happy to meet you, Sally. Listen, will you be safe if she go to the vent? She nodded. All right, when you're ready, we'll go. Can I stay with you? God, that voice. It was heartbreaking just to hear it. I'm going to be going places that aren't safe. I'm trying to help the other little girls, cure them. But if I take you with me, you'll get hurt, and I can't let that happen. She nodded again. Will you come back for me? I had no idea what to say to her. I didn't know if I'd be alive an hour from now. I had no business making promises I had no way to keep. I opened my mouth to let her know that I'd try, and instead the words, "I promise I'll come back to you," came tumbling out instead. She smiled and kissed my cheek, and for one idealistic moment I wanted to come back for her more than anything in rapture. I helped her up into the van and watched her crawl away. Congratulations, stupid. You just made a promise to a little girl that you'd come back for her. I promise you got a snowball's chance in hell of keeping. There's a special place in hell for guys who break promises to little girls. You know that, right? I stood up. Then there's only one thing to do about it. And what's that? Came the accusing voice. I set my teeth. Keep it, I said aloud, and then headed back to Langford. Right now, I didn't care how many people were in my way. I was going to save these people or die trying. Okay, no dying trying. Much better. Langford, get that lab warmed up. I'm coming back with the goods. I just need more of that chlorophyll stuff. Any ideas? The only ones I know for sure that could provide it are the Saturnine. They're... I heard about them. Aging frat boys drinking plasmids and calling it ambrosia. I really should be more careful about where I leave my audio notes. Well, don't be so hard on yourself. A lot of people have been leaving these things around. Lucky for me, it's helped me get a better understanding of the place. It's how I got more of clues that Atlas really was Frank Fontaine. Wait, what? What? Tell you all about it once I get a little bit more photosynthetic. Ciao. I smiled, taking some small satisfaction that the tables were turned, that I knew something she didn't. Thus armed, I headed for the caves where the Saturnine were known to hang out. Just follow the men made of sticks and vines. As I headed there, I came to the rolling hills and found the Big Daddy. And better yet, the last little sister in Arcadia was walking alongside him. I was low on ammo by that point, but I had an idea. I took all the proximity mines I'd hoarded up, placed them a stone's throw from the rocket turret nearby, waited until it was as far away from the turret as possible, and then fired off the shot from my pistol with an armor-piercing bullet. That got his attention, and he came right for me. But the rocket turret was already throwing rockets his way, which made his attention gathered as the more serious threat, and he barreled towards it right into the mines I'd laid out. And they'd laid him out proper, damaging to the point to where the now stunned Big Daddy was a sitting duck for the rocket turret. When it was all over, I cured little sister and sent her on her way. As I did, I hoped that Sally was okay. I hoped Elizabeth was okay. I hoped Langford was okay. And I really hoped I was going to be okay. After all I'd been through, the Saturnine were easy. Comparatively, Houdini splicers every one, and while they thought they were being sneaky, I was onto their game, and what they thought made them special also made them predictable. Loaded up on explosive buckshot, waited for them to vanish, and hit them as they were reappearing. They didn't even have a chance to return fire, literally. Searching them got me the rest of the chlorophyll solution I needed. Things were starting to look up. I hot-footed over to Langford, showing a few more dead splicers. I checked them over. Hey, waste not, want not. More ammo, some med packs, a few more spare parts that could be used in the U-Invent. Every little bit helps. I made it up to Langford's office and found her in the lab, with the vents in the room not only shut, but sealed. She was looking more cheerful and... Was she wearing makeup? Okay, not important. Got everything, Doc, I said as I laid out the ingredients she needed. Let's get this garden growing again. Langford looked the ingredients over. I have to admit it, Mark. I am impressed. I've been listening in on the radio, and you've clearly surviving despite everything that's thrown at you. Yeah, well, I got something you really need to listen to. I pulled out the audio box I had found while searching the farmer's mock air. One from Andrew Ryan, marked Desperate Times. I think this might explain a few things. I hit play. From Andrew Ryan. Dr. Suchong, frankly I'm shocked by your proposal. If we were to modify the structure of our commercial plasmid line as you propose, to have them make the user vulnerable to mental suggestion through pheromones, would we not be able to effectively control the actions of the citizens of Rapture? Free will is the cornerstone of this city. The thought of sacrificing is abhorrent. However, we are indeed in a time of war. If Atlas and his bandits have their way, will they not turn us into slaves? And what will become of free will then? Desperate times call for desperate measures. Dr. Langford stared at the device as if it was covered with small lizards. That hypocrite! The utter gall of the man! Preaching over and over about his beliefs, taking control of Fontaine Futuristics wasn't enough. He's betrayed everything he stood for. Her hands clenched into fists, and then she looked into my eyes. Wow, Julie was scary when she was cheesed off. She didn't say another word, pouring the ingredients into the UN vent, and after listening to some clanking and churning, out came a bottle filled with a milky green fluid within it. Listen to me, Mark. As soon as this starts to work, Ryan is going to send every splicer he's got left in Arcadia straight here. Even with the turrets and other defenses, this lab isn't made to hold off that many splicers. I heard what she was saying, and unfortunately, I knew exactly what would help. One of Tenenbaum's gifts included a new type of plasmid, one that would enable me to get any big daddy to think of me as a little sister and defend me just as vigorously. There were no more little sisters in here, but there were a few big daddies left, stuck on their eternal rounds even without their charges. The problem was injecting myself with yet even more of Rapture's witch's brew. What bothered me was the idea itself bothered me even less. Part of me wanted to see what I could do with it. And I was seeing the potential in how it could be used later to rescue other little sisters. What better weapon than to take down a big daddy than another big daddy? Dr. Langford must have seen the look on my face. There's something on your mind. I can get us reinforcements, but it involves doing something I don't want to do and yet want to do even though I shouldn't. Splicing. Dr. Langford nodded, sitting down at one of her lab stations. Listen to me. Either way you play it, if we don't get help, both of us are going to be dead before the Lazarus vector can be dispersed. They'll be able to shut it down, and without another source of oxygen, a lot of people are going to die. Ryan won't care. You've heard him. He'd destroy Rapture before he'd allow it to slip from his control. Can he do that? Destroy the whole city? He could. And I think you know he would. I couldn't believe it. And there's nothing we can do to stop him? Dr. Langford looked up at me. I didn't say that. I just don't know how, yet. But first things first. I'm not going to try to convince you that the ends justify the means. Ryan based his entire idea on how to run Rapture on that principle, and you can see the results. But I cannot see another way around it. Give me a chance to think about it. See if I can come up with another idea. Very well. I owe you that much, considering what you've done. But don't take too much time to think. Time is not a luxury we currently possess. Right. I walked back out to the grotto, back to where I'd first found the rose that had started this scavenger hunt. I went through the bodies I'd put aside before, merely a reflex now, thinking about how few options I had, then sat down. I pulled out the service radio. That which had become my lifeline for my soul. I picked it up and turned the frequency to Elizabeth's. Turkey to Songbird, Turkey to Songbird, are you out there? Over. The reply took too long in coming for my taste. Hello? She said, sounding slurred. Elizabeth, are you all right? Mark, is that you? He sounded a bit off. Yeah, it's me. Are you okay? Need my medicine. Give me a second. Okay, take your time. Not going anywhere. I sat there pulling my feet out of the water. Being damp on a regular basis didn't bother me as much as it used to. 12 minutes went by before I heard her voice again. I'm here, Mark. She sounded like her old self again. Are you all right? Yeah, I really needed to talk to you again. You know, a girl could get used to this kind of attention, she added saucily. Huh? Are you okay? You sound different. Sorry, it's just... I've been on my own for months, no one to talk to for long periods. My social skills may be suffering. And the pharmacy here is running low on the medicine I need. Is there anything I can do to help? Well, there's one place that has more of what I need, but to get what I need, it's going to take Adam to get it. Well, I can help you with that. In fact, kind of touches on what I wanted to talk to you about. I got the chance to help get the trees and plants you're living again, but to do that, I'm going to need some help. I can get it, but to do that, I have to splice up some more. She was silent for a while. I kept talking, not sure why. Look, Elizabeth, you're the only person I know that really cares about me, and I really wish I could be there to help you. You know, not be so alone. But to do that, I'm going to have to do things I'm not proud of myself for doing. I know exactly how you feel. You do? We've all got our sins, our debts to pay. Some we'll never be able to settle. But if what you're doing helps others, then you do what you have to do. I nodded. Thanks. I'm not going to be okay with what I have to do, but you help me feel better about it. Look, we can help each other out. I've got almost all the Adam I've ever collected from the little sisters I've saved and the big daddies I've had to take out. You do? You sounded eager. Yeah, but I don't need it, and you do. So I'm going to pneumo it to you, and you can use it to get your medicine. I hope you got a lot. What I need is going to require a lot of Adam. I've got just over 1,000 units. That is a lot. Will it be enough? It'll be plenty. She sounded happy, which made me feel even better. I'll send it on in a few minutes. I took a deep breath. I was tired, but hearing Elizabeth's voice helped get me moving. Thanks. I just hope I don't end up splicing up so much that you won't want to look at me when I get over there. Get over here? I made a promise. You, me, Paris, remember? Mark, it's all right if you don't keep your promise. Elizabeth, what are you talking about? Mark, listen. I'm not Rapunzel in the tower waiting to let down my hair. You've got this idea in your head that you'll rush over here like some knight in shining armor to rescue the damsel fair. But it's not going to turn out the way you think. I'm not fair. In fact, you'd be repulsed by what you see looking at me now. And I am no maiden in distress. I've done things I can never atone for, never take back, never repay. I'm not who or what you think I am. That medicine you needed. It's Adam, isn't it? Yes. When Fontaine hurt you, it needed more than a med pack to heal you, didn't it? You had to use Adam directly. But Adam's scarce. How'd you survive this long? Before Atlas returned to Rapture, he had big daddies and little sisters collecting here in the department store. Not many, but enough to stockpile Adam. When he and his splicers made their assault on Rapture, they took almost all their stockpile with them. But one of their caches was left behind when a counterattack by Ryan's forces took out a group of Atlas's men here in the store. The forces were defeated, the camp looted, but Ryan's men missed the cache of Adam. How'd you survive long enough to find it? One of the little sisters helped me. I tried to help her, save her, but I failed. Twice. And she gave me the Adam she had. I just used it to heal myself and came across the other atom when scavenging. Oh, Sally. Wait a minute. Sally? Yes, that was... What is it? Well, I just met her little sister and saved her an hour ago. Got the slug out of her and made her a little girl again. She said her name was Sally. Blonde hair? Blue eyes? Yeah. It must be her. I don't believe it. Where is she now? She's probably with the others I saved. Wherever that is. Oh, God. Oh, God, oh, God. Mark, you have no idea what you've done for me. Elizabeth, listen to me. I'm going to send you the atom, but I need you to do something for me. Anything. Stay alive. That's the favor. I did you a solid. Now you do me a solid. All right, Mark. But you better be careful what you wish for. Done. I got up and headed to the gatherer's garden. Time to call in the heavies. The look on Langford's face was priceless as I walked in with a big daddy on my heels, following me like a puppy. Think this guy might even the odds? Can you control it? Completely. I don't know for how long, but there's another one patrolling the area outside. Push comes to shove, and this guy isn't enough, I can call the other one. I went to my stash and handed her a box of anti-personnel machine gun ammo. Every round I have of this type, low B, so they'll be fired first. Can you do that? Of course. As soon as you're done, start processing the Lazarus vector and stay in the lap. Don't come out till it's done, or the shooting stops, whichever comes last. I wish I felt as confident about this as I sounded. She nodded and went to work. I looked up at the big daddy. Come along, Fido, let's get to work. I proceeded to lay traps and proximity mines at the doorways, staggering them just enough so they take out not only the splicers that came in first, but the ones that came in afterwards. I just had to make sure Fido stayed out of the way. I wasn't sure how our newfound friendship would last if it got hit by an attack it perceived as coming from me. Mark, Langford called from the lab intercom. I'm ready to start processing the vector through the misting system. It has to mix thoroughly with the water reservoirs if it's going to be effective enough to cover all plant life in Arcadia and the farmer's market. Well, how long is that going to take? A few minutes. The reservoirs hold tens of thousands of gallons. Start it now. God, I hope to hell I knew what I was doing. They came in just as Langford said, mere seconds after she started mixing the vector. One thing you can say about Ryan, he's predictable when it comes to taking something away from him that he thinks he owns. At first, I figured the doors would be enough to keep them out. Then I remembered that the tools made to build Rapture hadn't evaporated when the city was built. I saw the telltale lights of acetylene torches used to burn their way through the doors. I retreated as far back as I could, seeing the other doors being cut through as I made my way to the door leading up the stairs to Langford's lab. The big daddy followed obediently, and I held up a hand. Stay, boy. It didn't react, but it stayed put, even as I heard one of the doors give way in the yelling, however brief, as they moved in and found the little Christmas presents I'd left for them. And unlike regular Christmas presents, these gifts unwrapped them. The boom startled the others, but didn't scare them off. And another door came down, more splicers coming in and setting off the mines there, too. From that point on, things got very loud. Splicers came in from all sides, and my back was to the gate to the lab. The turrets placed around the lab was making short work of the splicers, but with each wave, they suffered more and more damage, and I had no time to make repairs. Soon, the turrets would be horde of combat, and which means I would end up as the main course. But before that happens, I'll send them something tough to chew on. They pulled out the machine gun. A short burst of an enemy should be enough to let the big daddy know who to stomp on. I just have to make sure I didn't get killed while I was out playing ping pong with the splicer's internal organs. Three waves down. The turret in the outside offices is down. The others are starting to smoke and the bodies are piling up. The splicers from wave number 4 are ganging up on the big daddy like hyenas trying to take down an elephant. And the hyenas are giving the elephant a serious run for his money. Nothing for it. I've got to make a break for it, find the other big daddy and get his attention. There's too many of them. Every time I make a break for it, I get forced back and it's costing me medical packs and ammo. This is insane. The only chance I got is head to the other side of the room. It's flooded, but there's some furniture there I can stand on, and I can use the electro bolt to make it into the deadliest wading pool on Earth. If I can get there without getting dead... Yeah, that's beginning to be a recurring theme with my plans lately. I saw the number of hyenas drop to 3, and things are starting to look up, until I heard more yelling. For the love of Mike, is every damn splice in Arcadia coming to kill us? How many of them are even left? I moved back against the corner, preparing to make a break for it when the Big Daddy gave a long groan and keeled over. His problems were finally over and mine were just starting. I saw the splicers turning slowly towards me, bloodied and broken and honked off at me, and more were on the way. God, if you were planning a miracle in sometime in my immediate future, now would be a good time. They moved towards me slowly, clearly savoring the kill to come. I had shotgun rounds, but I'd be overwhelmed. And then I saw what came through the door to the left. Apparently, the mountain had decided to come to Mohammed. A Big Daddy lumbered in. The Palooka must have had the place on his patrol route, and Mr. the Ugly Bastard never looked so good. I threw a disgusting green glob at the thing, and the lights went from yellow to green. I turned back to look at the splicers. They had the same expression on their faces, one that said, "We are so screwed." Far be it for me to disappoint them, and I spit at one of them, hitting him square in the face. As soon as I did, the Big Daddy's lights went from green to here comes the pain red. The huge drill came up and the hammer came down on them. I had to back up for a different reason now, to keep from getting blood splattered all over me. A bell sounded in my ears, and I looked up as I heard a loud hissing sound. I made one last check for incoming splicers, but all I got was an eerie silence as I walked back to the lab and looked around. Winter was clearly over as the green started flooding back into all the plants, the trees, and the grass. I could barely believe it. Langstrom brought everything back from the dead! I ran upstairs to find Langstrom sitting at a nearby desk, opening a bottle of liquor and pouring 2 glasses. "Congrats, Doc, you did it. This old place is coming back to life." "Don't be silly, boy. We did it." She handed me a glass. "Without your help, I'd be stuck in my lab, still waiting to run out of food." I took the glass and emptied it in one smooth motion. "You have no idea how much I needed this." I sat down and looked over at her. "So what are you going to do now?" "Keep the lockdown in place until you have to leave, lock it up tight afterwards, and then I'm going to get the Thinker to have the security bots clean the last of the splicers out of here and secure power and heat. Thanks to you and Ryan's attempt to kill me, I just became an independent contractor." "You're not going to start charging people?" "Oh, of course not," she waved off the question. "I'm just not going to be beholden to Ryan, that lousy fink. I prefer to work with someone who doesn't think of murder as an option when moderating professional disputes." Chuckles. I chuckled to her and said, "Shucks, lady, you could always work for me. I don't exactly have a company, or a staff, or anything, but you could do worse." I poured myself another drink, tossed it back, then realized Julie wasn't talking. I turned to her and she was smiling at me. "What?" "You've got yourself a deal."
"Say what?"
"I said... you've got yourself a deal, boss."
I looked at the glass.
"What was in this stuff? I thought you were planning to be self-employed." "I was, but a better offer came along. Face it, Mark, we need each other's help, and I've been thinking about what you're doing. Curing the little sisters and thumbing your nose at Ryan may be its own reward, but you need to do more. Not everyone in Rapture is spliced up. Most of the people that are left are hiding in their homes, scared out of their minds, scavenging to survive."
"Wait, hold on. I'm just some slob who's in the wrong plane crash at the wrong time. I came here as Robinson Crusoe. At what point did I become George Washington?"
I closed my eyes and rubbed my temples. "Look, I haven't slept right in I don't know how long. It feels like I've been running for a month. Can I at least sleep on it?"
Langford nodded. "There's a bed in one of the offices here. Get some sleep, and we'll talk about it when you wake up.
Right. I can already feel my body fulfilling its promises. Pain and exhaustion making a simple walk to a bedroom feel like a marathon. The adrenaline was wearing off fast. I put down my weapons and collapsed into bed, close to Lon, asleep before my head hit the pillow. I opened my eyes. I was lying in bed, looking up at the ceiling. There was a chill in the room, and I realized I wasn't wearing any clothes. I looked up and saw Julie Langford standing over me. She looked younger, somehow, still attractive. She removed her smock and dress, standing there with nothing on, and right now I wanted her more than anything. She climbed into bed and straddled me, and I closed my eyes, and we were one. But she didn't make any noise. I opened my eyes to look up at Langford, and it wasn't Langford, it was another woman. Elizabeth. Only something wrong. She moved her head down and, oh God, she was a splicer, and she was all mouth and teeth, and I heard that perfect voice begging me to kiss her. I woke up, cold sweat freezing on my skin. I think I screamed, but I wasn't sure. Okay, I think we can now add one more side effect to splicing. Weird nightmares. Weird freaked out nightmares. I pulled myself up looking around. It was dark, only the lights from outside were visible. Neon signs. Some fish that could generate their own light. Something else. Some sort of light coming from the far side of Rapture. Mark? The voice behind me startled the hell out of me, and I spun around to see Langford there.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph! Don't sneak up on me like that!
Bad dreams, huh? The scream was a dead giveaway.
Okay, that wasn't embarrassing at all.
I'm sorry I snapped at you.
How long was I out?
About 14 hours.
How do you feel?
Better and worse. I groaned. Body aches, but I can cope.
Any news?
I made contact with people outside Arcadia. Kept it hush-hush. You're starting to become a regular celebrity.
Jeez, botanist and press agent.
I shook my head.
Coffee?
She pointed to the main lab.
There.
And there's a few people waiting to meet you.
Yeah, but Andrew Ryan's at the top of the list.
I poured myself a cup of coffee, then grimaced.
You know, Langford, for someone so good with plants, you really have some bad coffee beans.
You could always not drink it.
Be serious. Bad coffee is always better than no coffee.
I took another sip. Not exactly Folgers, but what was?
So, who else wants to sit down for a chin wag?
Sophia Lamb wants to speak to you. She says she's concerned about your mental welfare.
I blinked. What is she, a shrink?
Actually, yes. Ryan brought her down here to Rapture to help people cope with life here.
I laughed derisively.
It didn't help.
I think she also wants your help.
Oh, of course. Ryan made her disappear, stuck her in Persephone.
What's Persephone?
It's a prison where Ryan sends people to keep them quiet and out of the way. The inmates there get used as guinea pigs for experiments. It's run by one of the founders of this fair city, Augustus Sinclair.
Oh, by the by, he also wants to chat.
I'm sure he does.
What side is he on?
The side he's always on.
His own.
Great. Anyone else?
Yes.
Langford made a face.
Sander Cohen.
Oh, I've heard about him. Ryan put him in charge of Fort Frog, didn't he?
Heard he, in the terms used by the Matterborn, went peculiar.
He's been peculiar long before he came to Rapture, Mark. I think he's been splicing like it was Halloween candy.
Also, I have reason to believe he's a little, shall we say, light in the loafers.
I stared at Langford.
After all that I've had to deal with, I think we could put that little detail under the could-not-possibly-give-a-damn column, don't you think?
Okay, I know I'm going to regret this, but what do they want?
Langford looked at a piece of paper. Dr. Lem thinks her daughter's been made to a little sister. Her name's Eleanor. Black hair, blue eyes. I'll keep an eye out. Next. Sinclair wants to discuss a deal. If I know him, he's thinking of bringing the secrets of Rapture to the surface. Sinclair would sell mud if there was a buck to be made in it. I'm surprised Ryan hasn't canonized him yet. And Cohen? He's a bit more cryptic. He says, I can bring you to the songbird's cage, little moth, but in return I need you to help me with my greatest masterpiece. The way to Fort Frolic is open to you. Artists. The bathysphere here can get me to Fort Frolic? Considering the amount of traffic between there and here, if it had been a regular road, there'd be ruts for the tires by now. She looked at me. You're going there? I have to. Listen, stay a little longer. You could get more rest, and you could stay. For the first time, I saw her vulnerable. I had a feeling I knew what she wanted. Stay here where it's safe. We could spend some time together. Look, Julie, I made a promise. Would you really want me to stay if I was the kind of guy who bailed on people that needed him? She looked at me for a long time, then closed her eyes and sighed. You know, you think pretty highly of yourself, don't you? Here I was trying to keep you from getting killed, and you have to go and get all noble on me. Langford huffed, but I knew it was an act. Well, fine. I'm still in your employ, so you're stuck with me. But you'd better come through, mister. I'm sick and tired of disappointment. Works for me, Doc. I smiled as I packed for the trip. Langford had looted and dumped the bodies. They make good fertilizer. So I have plenty of money, raw materials, and ammo to work with. A quick trip to the U-Invent and the Circus of Values, and I was loaded for bear. And I had a bad feeling it wasn't going to be enough. I stopped at the door to the bathysphere and looked back. Langford waved to me and I smiled, repeating to myself that this wasn't going to be the first time, that this wasn't going to be the last time I'd see her. They entered the bathysphere. Langford, can you hear me? Oh, I hear you loud and clear. Got everything locked down? Doors are shut and the bathysphere lifts are locked in the down position. Even if they could take a bathysphere here, they'd be stuck below the waterline. Without the lifts to bring up the bathysphere, they might as well be in Iowa. Good. I'm glad you'll be safe. A moment of silence and... Oh, you're a darling man. If only I was 20 minutes younger. Okay. I'll check in with you later. Get some rest. I clicked off and sat back in the bathysphere, looking out the window of the door. There were more neon signs up, more advertising for casinos, a theater called the Fleet Hall, a place called Eve's Garden. I got the distinct impression I was heading toward the funhouse, but I wasn't going to be the one having any fun. I stepped out into the entranceway to Fort Frolic, hearing music coming in over the loudspeakers. I picked up the radio and switched the channel to Elizabeth's frequency. Elizabeth, I made it to Fort Frolic. Looks like Cohen's going to have me singing for my supper, so to speak. I listened for a reply. Nothing. She must be asleep. At least I hope she was asleep. Elizabeth? Static. I was really starting to dislike this place. Maybe it's a dead zone, maybe the reception's bad. Atlas, Ryan, Langford, Songbirds, da 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 da, came a new voice over the radio. Time was you could get something decent on the radio. Or my radio was being jammed by a psychotic. The artist has a duty to seduce the ear and delight the spirit. So say goodbye to all those blowhards and say hello to an evening with Sander Cohen. The front door opened, sliding to the side. I walked into an entrance area with one of those fortune-telling machines to the right, some telephones, and a gene bank to the left, as well as a serious set of metal shutters covering a double-sized entrance. For someone who was supposedly so welcome, this place was pretty empty. I walked forward, seeing some crates and some rubble to the side. The hall curved to the right, and there was an open door straight ahead that led straight to another bathysphere. Hot damn! Elizabeth, here I come. I ran through the doorway to the bathysphere, but before I could reach it, the door closed and the craft lowered into the water. I stopped before I collided with the gate in front of where the bathysphere once sat, and then I heard piano music. As the music played, I saw a large bunny mask lower in front of me, and I took in the rest of the details of the room around me. The walls were covered by red curtains like a movie theater, with statues being lowered, and they looked like they were made of plaster. You'd think that someone as theatrical as Cohen would have made them look nicer. If I didn't know better, I'd think they were... Oh my God. No. He didn't! Now, I haven't seen a sign of real life down here in months. Let's see if you're just a little Johnny come lately, or maybe something more delicious. I turned back towards the entrance hall. I think I groaned. How can a man on the ocean floor manage to get himself even deeper in trouble? BioShock Part 6. Well, here I was, in Fort Frolic. However, I was about as far from the mood to do any frolicking as I was from the island of Fiji. I knew I was close to finding Elizabeth, but the ferryman was a flipped-out artiste with some murderous ideas about what constituted performance art. In one case, it involved covering people in plaster and making them into statues. And I had the familiar sinking feeling that sculpture wasn't the only medium this artist worked in. Well, unless I wanted to swim to where Elizabeth was, I had to play this artist's game and dance to his little tune a little. Whoa! I stopped short as I saw a web of wires strung across the hallway, just like the ones used to block my path back at the Rose Garden in Arcadia. And from the looks of the sparks they were giving off, each one carried a lethal charge, aching to discharge into anyone stupid enough to even look at him funny. Well, if Cohen expected me to just blunder into them, then he gave me too much clearance. I saw the wires in plenty of time to avoid them, and there was some open space to the left. As I moved to the left, I had to laugh at the sloppy work. As a trap, it was as dumb can get. That's when I heard the telltale scrapings of spider splicers moving across the ceiling towards me. This wasn't a trap. This was a corral. I brought up the shotgun. I briefly thought about maybe using the charged trip lines as cover, trying to get the splicers to follow, but I knew they'd throw their hooks at me and I'd be a sitting duck. No, better to face them head on. Not much better, but better. The first two dropped, male and a female. Both were dressed for the theater, and their clothes were once quite elegant. Now they were bloody rags. I didn't think it was their blood. I ducked out of the way as the female leaped towards me, then fired twice at her, then at the male, catching him in mid-leap. Researching how to make them dead faster, and a shotgun filled with double-aught buckshot made short work of them, but more were coming. I considered that aimed my pistol not at them, but at the ceiling they traveled across, causing them to let go and fall into the web of tripwires, electrocuting them and removing the wires, making the corral bigger. Nicely done, Cohen said approvingly. Where did you study? Great. He sees combat and death as art. Rapture School of Hard Knocks, I answered, going back to the shotgun. Three more splicers crawling across the roof. I waited for him to get close, then sprinted for the other side of the open space, stopping just short of the remaining tripwires, looking around as if to look for a means for escape. I counted the three in my head, then jumped to the side as the three splicers, sensing panicked prey, decided to race to see who would be the first to eviscerate me. Instead, they crashed into each other and the remaining tripwires. I waited until the end form electrocution stopped, then hot-footed it towards the entrance so I could get room to maneuver. I was tired of playing around with these guys, and I switched to the grenade launcher, turning and firing. My ears rang as the explosives turned the splicers into meat confetti, and I scanned the area looking to see if any more wanted to dance. Oh, I can smell the malt vinegar in this one. The bastard was practically rubbing his hands together in glee. I could hear it in his voice. I've waited so long for something tasty to come to this little burg, but all that pass are yokels and rubes. Where are my manners? Come in, come in. Sounder Cullen awaits you at the Fleet Hall.
Oh, the anticipation was killing me. No, wait, actually it wasn't. Everything else wanted that.
As the double set of shutters opened, I heard music and saw lights coming on in front of me. I moved in carefully. Bitter experience had taught me the stupidity of going into any place in Rapture with closed eyes and fast feet. I entered a large area with a set of stairs going up. Near the foot of the stairs had a small stage, curtains and all. More plaster-covered splicers were there, six on the stage, supporting five frames, and five others, frozen in positions of adoration and applause. The stairs leading up gave a great view of the neon signs advertising the nearby stores, casinos, and other attractions.
Welcome to Fort Frolic, Sander proudly crowed using the PA system. I felt about as welcome as a case of syphilis, but he went on.
No need to thank me for jamming the transmissions of those outsiders. Let them have their squabbles and their agendas. The artist, yes, the artist knows there is richer earth to till. Now I knew why he was so happy to see me. As much as he needed an audience, he wanted something more to justify his arrogance. I got the feeling he wanted me to help him create something, and the blank frames on the stage cinched it. If it was something he could do, he would have done it himself already. Besides, that's what underlings are for. For example, I test you, little moth, but for a reason. I test all of my disciples. Some shine like galaxies, and some burn like a moth at the flame. Come now into my home, said the spider to the moth. I went up the stairs and headed for the Fleet Hall. It was easily the biggest theater I've seen here yet. It had its own ticket booth, snack counter, and security camera. One jolt and a convenient hack later, and the front entranceway was locked. You know, there's nothing like a nice impartial setup, which is exactly what this was, nothing like that. Let's see, locked main door, two ways up from here, a roped off set of stairs, and an elevator. Apparently someone thinks I celebrated my first birthday yesterday. I walked to the stairs and deposited some proximity mines, then sauntered over to the elevator and held my finger over the call button. Gentlemen, start your engines. I pressed the button, then beat feet to the foyer. Just in time, too. Three leadhead splicers ran down the stairs, screaming in rage as they hit the mines. All four of them. Miraculously, two of them survived, heading straight for the elevator, crossing right in front of the security camera, and each of them earning their own very hostile security bot, patent pending. I resisted the urge to grab a snack as the splicers lost all interest in killing me, and then all interest in oxygen. Besides, God only knew how long those candy bars had been on the shelf. The elevator arrived, the splicers were dead, and as usual, it was waste not, want not, and then I got into the elevator and pressed the button to go up. The car rose slowly, and as I went up, I heard someone playing a piano. Nice tune, classical piece. And as I got to the next floor, I heard Cullen yelling, "No, no, no!" Then a new voice, pleading, "Mr. Cullen, please!"
"Silence," Cullen said, strict.
So it wasn't Cullen playing, it was someone else.
"Allegro, Allegro!"
I frowned. I might not have been a music critic, but the piano work sounded great to me. I moved over the carpeted hallway and then came to the glass doors, separating the hallway from the audience. They opened obediently, and I could hear the music clear. It was beautiful, if energetic. The piano player was playing up a storm. I moved closer only to hear the music interrupted by Cohen's voice again.
Da 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 da! Presto, presto! No, no!
The music stopped and the player turned, giving me a better look at him. His face was covered with his bird's mask. Behind him, I could see shadows of figures carrying large scissors, and there was some red weaved cloth draped over the piano. Wait, that wasn't cloth. There were several red sticks bound together like a string of firecrackers, only each of them was a foot long.
I'm trying, please.
The man pleaded again. Cohen, however, was unsympathetic. Once more, young Fitzpatrick? This couldn't be. Was Cohen really going to blow a man to kingdom come for not playing music the way Cohen wanted it? I froze, not wanting to make things worse. I'd never be able to run over to Fitzpatrick in time. Maybe if Cohen hasn't seen me yet, I could sneak closer, maybe yank the primer. Fitzpatrick started playing again, but I'd lost all interest in the music. I had to figure out a way to get him away from that piano. I moved as close as I could, hiding behind the other splicers, literally plastered to their seats.
Da 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 da! No, no!
Cohen yelled. Fitzpatrick turned to look straight at the light and yelled,
Oh, Cohen, you sick fuck, let me out of
The explosion of the piano lit up the theater as if the sun had suddenly sneaked down a few fathoms, and I felt the blast wave lift me up and knock me a few feet backwards. I landed hard, then pulled myself to my feet. Fitzpatrick lay on the right side of the stage, burned nearly beyond recognition. The piano had been reduced to kindling. My ears were still ringing, and my side hurt where I landed on the steps. I walked towards the stage in a daze, my mind fighting to comprehend what had happened, and feeling miserably.
Calm down now, little moth. Life, death, the burden of the artist is to capture.
I wanted to punch that smug little bastard in the nose almost more than anything in the world right now. I wanted to punch him until Fitzpatrick asked me to stop. But this guy was the way to get to Elizabeth, so I had to bide my time. What do you want me to do? See young Fitzpatrick's there on the stage? Use your camera. Take him as he is now, so that I remember him. I got closer. The smell hit me first, a smell that reminded me dismally of pork chops. I tried not to gag as I got closer to his body. Cohen suddenly yelled,
What are you waiting for? Fitzpatrick can't hold that pose forever!
I thought, I'm pretty sure he can. I took his picture and walked away fast before I threw up at the smell. And now you've got Fitzpatrick caught in his moment of glory, Cohen said with great satisfaction. It seems you've got the eye of the shutterbug, little moth. So now what? I asked as I walked back up the stairs to the second floor. Now head to the atrium and place his photograph in my masterpiece. And so our collaboration commences. I didn't like the sound of that. What's more, I realized I had no idea how many little sisters were in this place, and I had no way of finding out by talking to Tannenbaum. Maybe you found a pneumo, but that was going to have to wait. I went back to the stage and looked it over. It ran on a lit reflection apparatus of some kind. I went to the back, slipped the photo into place, and the image was projected on one of the framed screens. Pretty clever. And morbid as hell. Yes, and there's Fitzpatrick, freed of his own kinks and defects. There was a sound of tinny fanfare, then a door on the floor of the stage opened, with what appeared to be a plaster statue with a crossbow in its hands rising from the floor. Go ahead. Take it. You may yet find it of some use. Now here's the glorious news. This is just the moment of conception. Out in this place there are three men and one woman, all former disciples of mine, all connected by a common thread. Betrayal, little moth. Find the men and immortalize their mortality in my pentaptic. Find the songbird in her cage and silence her twittering. I felt as if somebody had put my heart into a vice, surrounded by ice. I had to think fast. So, go. Once they've been sent to their reward, I shall join your new coalition against a man I once loved. Imagine my glee, I thought. Where are they?
You'll find three of them in Poseidon's plaza. When they are dust, I shall bring you to the songbird. Clip her wings and bring her body to me.
I thought you just wanted her picture.
Do not cast me as the fool in this production. I am aware that should you meet her and see her face, she will beguile you. Plead for her life, use her female charms.
You made this word sound like profanity.
Upon you. Do her best to distract you. An artist that cannot commit to a vision is no better than someone painting a house.
Fine, but I want something more from you.
Cohen was suspicious. He didn't even bother to hide it in his voice.
Oh, and why, little moth, should I give you more?
I want to know what happened here. I wasn't here when everything went down, so tell me what happened.
Between you and me, I think you want to tell me.
Who else here would appreciate the story?
Very well. But if I find that this is some attempt to trick me in some way, remember, Ryan doesn't control the spicers here, little moth.
I do.
I made a show of looking resigned.
You're the director.
I head off to Poseidon's plaza, hearing his chuckle in my ears.
It didn't take long to find the next one. Martin Finnegan, a splicer whom Cohen is doomed to the frozen passage between the atrium and the plaza. I found an audio box that Finnegan had recorded, detailing his survival by cooking up his own plasmids from the bodies that Cohen had sent in to kill Finnegan. I pulled out my flamethrower, a better cure for the cold than chicken soup, and went inside. I shivered. The place was so cold it made the freezers in the fisheries feel like a summer's day. I wasn't about to let Finnegan get an unfair advantage, so as soon as I came in, I started hosing the place down with flames. Seems like Finnegan had been waiting here to freeze me solid nearby, but coming in like a fireball meant two benefits in my favor. Not only did it literally smoke Finnegan from his hiding place, but it also defrosted some of the other trophies he set up around the room. And they were still lively enough to use what strength they had left to make Finnegan's life a lot shorter. I defrosted the last of them and watched as they ganged up on Finnegan.
Ah, nothing like the sight of social evolution in action, I murmured, not wanting to make myself another target once they were done with Finnegan. As it turned out, I was worrying for no reason. They were all on their last legs, using what little life they had left to take Finnegan's. As the last of them fell, taking Finnegan with them, I heard Cohen simpering, "That was bracing. Take a photo of him and place it in the pentaptic. I'm feeling full, like an expectant mama."
"An expectant mama what?" I asked myself. But I took the picture and hurried back to the atrium. It's too damn cold in here.
"Yes, now put the picture in the frame. Let's see what you've got here."
I finished putting the picture into place and stepping back.
"It's coming together, yes, but there will always be doubters."
"You don't doubt me, do you?"
"I could never stomach doubters," Cohen added darkly. "Believe me, Cohen, I have no doubts whatever in my mind."
And I finished mentally, "That you need to be fitted for a new jacket with sleeves that tie in the back."
"Well, little moth, two more await. And hurry. My muse is a fickle little bitch with a very short attention span."
I nodded. I knew how he felt about his muse.
I had a monkey on my back who was the same way.
"Cohen, tell me about Songbird.
What more needs be known, little moth, that she deserves blood and pain for her betrayal?"
"Well, Cohen, there's an old saying, know thine enemy."
"Ah, you're not a moth. You're a hornet."
His tone was something approaching admiring.
"When she came to me, she was a moth herself, trying to approach the dizzying flame of my world. She was untrained, but not unpossessing of musical talent. She sang for me a song of such passion. At the same time, she was a woman who truly understood loss and pain."
His tone grew wistful.
"And men found her irresistible."
"Think you can give me a picture, just to make sure I could recognize my target?"
"Oh, I can do better. You should be coming up on a record store soon." I entered the mall after passing through the frozen chamber.
There were several storefronts here on two levels, easily accessible by a double set of wide stairs, one of which was occupied by a big daddy following a little sister. I started to formulate a plan on what to do about him when I heard the telltale sounds of spider splicers crawling across the ceiling. Oh, that's fine. I hefted my new crossbow. Two birds with one stone. I should really stop getting cocky. It's going to get me killed. Everything was going swell. I'd gotten the Big Daddy to attack the splicers and managed to swoop in, get the little sister, and cure her before she made a run for it. Even used some trap bolts to help me take out the splicers before they could position themselves to attack. When the last of the splicers down, the Big Daddy walked towards me, and the head of the thing brushed against one of the trap lines. Those lights went from green to red faster than a traffic light in Brooklyn, and before I knew it, we weren't pals no more. I used up every grenade I had taken down the rest of the way, backpedaling as I did, feeling like a moron the entire time. If the splicers hadn't already worn it down, I'd be fitted for a coffin. Epitaph. Here lies Mark Jacobs. Engineer, explorer, schmuck. Mourners, please omit flowers. I picked myself up. If his next disciple wasn't aware of me before, he sure as shooting was now. Maybe he'd be open to a little diplomacy. But first, a little preparation. I walked towards his place, Rapture Records, looking around at the state of the store. Looks like Silas was having a fire sale. There was a pile of records, all by Sandra Cohen, merrily burning like a Cub Scout campfire. Look, Silas, I said in a low voice, I got a plan. Cohen wants you dead, but I don't. Work with me. We can fake your death, set up a real surprise for him, take him out for good. What do you say? I stopped as I saw him sitting on a chair on the floor below. I jumped down, then walked over to get his attention, and that's when I heard the ticking sound. That was him telling me to go screw myself. I bolted back to find that the stairs were out, and the only protection I had was a ratty mattress. I pulled it over me just as the clock went ding, then boom. Seems Silas already had his own plan for faking his death, and making mine come along as well. My collection's almost complete. Let's see who the real artist is down here. Tell the old crow his music cooks better than it sounds. Damn it, Silas, I'm trying to help you. You Cohen's messenger boy? I want some for that crow. Great. Angry and spliced up. So much for diplomacy. Spend a little time with my kitten, sugar. From it there, I thought he'd taken one plasmid too many. Kittens? How are amateur felines going to... Then I saw the splicers falling from the ceiling and landing in front of me, wearing cat masks, while on fire. Oh, those kittens. I got up after the last of the splicers fell. Silas may have had loyal followers, but loyalty isn't a suitable replacement for non-burning body parts. If I hadn't shot them, they would have fallen over on their own. I found my way back up to the entrance through the ductwork, then came back and dusted myself off. It's all okay, Aaron boy. Cohen, Ryan, two old birds pulling on each other's milk sticks. Okay, I'm starting to want to help this guy a lot less now. People trying to kill me tends to dampen feelings of generosity. Silas, don't force this. I don't want to kill you. I struggled my way to the door past the burning records to see Silas standing there in a bird mask, carrying a crate of some kind, loaded with bottles with rags jammed into their mouths. He stared at me, then yelled, "My kittens! You murdered my..." That was it. That was officially it. Here I was, doing everything I can to save his life, spare him a spot on Cohen's exhibit. He sets splicers on me and acts like it's a horrible injustice that I have the gall to still be alive? Right in the middle of his rant, I pulled up the crossbow and put one right between the eye holes of the mask. The mask split open and fell to the floor. Silas was instantly, finally silent. At that point, I saw his face. His eyes were sunken, his skin waxy and falling away from his muscles and tendons. He looked like a ghoul. When he fell to the ground, all I could feel was relief.
He was a nasty one, and my favorite.
Felt like Cohen was right behind me, looking over my shoulder at my handiwork. The sensation made my skin crawl. But I think I like him better this way. Take his damn photo, chop chop!
I grumbled involuntarily as I took the photo. This whole place is getting on my nerves.
I got back to the atrium and headed for Cohen's exhibit. Cohen couldn't shut up as I arrived.
You flutter all around the fort, taking life as you go. You're not a moth or a hornet. You're an angel.
It sounded like the realization filled him with some kind of awe.
I've never painted an angel.
Maybe I should.
I didn't answer. Doing this for him was disgusting enough. Holding my tongue was worse.
I put the picture into place and stepped back.
That's 3 of 5. What's that look? You don't like it, do you?
I swore inwardly. I forgot the son of a bitch could still see me. My expression must have set him off.
I don't need to be judged by you, by anyone. Screw you. Screw all you fucking doubters. Hear what I say to all of you.
Crap. Here we go. Think. God damn it, think. Wait. Eve's Garden. I ran like hell towards the front doors of the Gentlemen's Club. I haven't really tried to spend too much time down here. The twin turrets flanking the front doors made me feel unsociable. But right now, I didn't have a choice. What I did have, though, was an electro-bolt plasmid and 2 auto-hack tools set aside for a rainy day, and I knew a hurricane was coming. It got to the start of the long hallway leading to the front of the club, and I let loose with the lightning as soon as I turned the corner. I shocked the turrets before they could get off a shot, and used both tools on each as the splicers Cohen sent after me came around the corner. And to top it all off, Cohen was playing some classical music from the Nutcracker. I think it was Dance of the Flowers or something like that. As the turrets were cutting into the splicers, I had my research camera out, snapping photos left and right to learn more about their weaknesses. As I snapped one of the Houdini splicers, something new came out. A formula for a new plasmid. I stuck it in my pocket to look at later and then decided to hedge my bets for the next wave by setting up trap bolts all up and down the hallway. The next wave came through and I was starting to feel pretty smart. Right up until the big daddy showed up with the little sister. Before I even realized what was going on, a stray shot hit the big daddy. The headlights went red and now my troubles had doubled. The big daddy took one look at the turret and charged towards it, moving through the electrified trap wires like a bull in a china shop. It was clear the effort hurt it considerably, but not enough to keep it from bashing away at one of the turrets. I grabbed the little sister and pulled her into the club, purging the slug from her body quickly. There were no vents nearby, so I put her under a table nearby. "Don't come out until I say, kid, it's not safe."
"You're him, aren't you?"
she asked, a slight British accent to her voice.
"Who?" "The sad man."
I sighed, tried to smile.
"Not all the time. Stay here."
I ran back outside to see more splicers coming and I drew my shotgun. One of the turrets was still operational, the other totally destroyed by the big daddy. I gritted my teeth. Time to go to work.
Fortunately, it seemed that Cohen had killed the bulk of his forces for the sake of art. Only one more wave came through before they'd had enough. Down to 1 med pack, but the splicers here were nice enough to donate to the Get Mark Out of Rapture Alive Fund. A trip to the vending machines would sort me out right. I walked back into the club. The girl was still there as I knelt down. "It's okay, the splicers are gone. I'll take you somewhere safe." She nodded, taking my hand and standing up. Then she said, very prim and proper, with a small curtsy,
"My name is Eleanor Lam. I am pleased to meet you."
I couldn't help but laugh.
"Well, Eleanor, my name is Mark Jacobs. It's a pleasure to make your acquaintance."
She smiled back, beaming. God, that smile. I walked with her back to the nearest vent.
"How many more little sisters are there in this level?"
She calculated in her head, then said, 2. All the others here were either sold off or helped by you." I stopped.
"Sold." Took a deep breath.
"By whom?"
Her face grew frightened. Mr. Cohen. I brought her to the vet and lifted her up. Listen, you don't need to worry about him anymore. I'll find the other two and send them home too, okay? She nodded, then disappeared into the vent. I turned towards the atrium. Cohen, you have got a lot to answer for, and so help me God, I'll make sure you never destroy any more lives. If I achieve nothing more to do that, it'll be enough. I entered the atrium slowly after refitting and rearming. I heard Cohen's voice again, and I had to physically restrain myself from making inarticulate sounds of rage. I'm sorry for that outburst. You'll have to forgive an old fool his artistic temperament. My God, he sounds like he did nothing more than spill his drink at a party. The birth is so close now. The labor pains can blur the judgment and drive the passions of even the finest spirits. Oh, I'm sure, I said, my teeth grinding. Who's the fourth? Rodriguez. You may find him at his usual preferred place of libation, as most failed artists are wont to go, trying to find talent at the bottom of a bottle. I nodded and went to pick up the little gifts he'd set aside each time I brought a picture. Mostly Eve hypos and med packs, but this one was different. It was a record. The front said, "Presenting Elizabeth, Cohen's new songbird, You Belong to Me." And it had a picture of Cohen on the right and a woman on the left. And she was beautiful. Dark hair, elfin features, a choker around her neck with an image of a bird on it. Her voice barely did her justice. The thought of someone like that having to endure what she did? I didn't think I could hate this place, Fontaine, Ryan, or Cohen even more than I already did. I was wrong. Eve's garden, I asked as evenly as I could. Yes, you may find it useful to go to one of the back rooms and wait there for him. And after him, Songbird. No answer, but I could tell the smug bastard thought he had me right where he wanted me. I walked out of the atrium. One more disciple, two more little sisters. Don't get cocky. I did what I could to repair the remaining turret in front of Eve's garden, and then went inside. Now that I had a chance to get a better look at the place, bar to drink at, a stage for dancers, even some posters around for some of the girls. One in particular, Jasmine Jolene, Andrew Ryan's favorite gal. Judging from the posters and the photograph of the bar, she was a looker all right. The photo showed her hanging off Ryan's arm, a smile on her face, and from the outfit she was wearing, Jasmine definitely had, as an old schoolmate once put it, a body built for bedrooms. Looking around at the state this place was in, it was a sure bet she'd packed up and ran to Ryan's side as soon as Fort Frolic went to hell. I hate to think what would happen to a woman that looked like her in this burg. What Cohen would do to her. I climbed up on the stage and walked towards the back, and as soon as I made the turn to the right, I knew something was wrong. Then the door opened. The first thing that hit me was the smell. It nearly knocked me off my feet. I covered my face with a cloth and looked around, trying to get my eyes to focus. It was a really nice bedroom, four-poster bed, safes of furniture, and Jasmine Jolene's body. Her body was twisted. I didn't need to be a coroner to tell that she'd been strangled to death. Did some splicer do this? I used my last hack tool on the safe and found some supplies. And a recording. That creepy Dr. Tenenbaum promised me it wasn't going to be a real pregnancy. They just take the egg out once Mr. Ryan and I'd... I need the money so bad. But I know Mr. Ryan's going to suss it out. Going to know I wasn't being careful. Going to know I sold the... Mr. Ryan's going to be so mad at me. I ran out of the room and closed the door behind me fast. I stayed there, my back against the wall as the sheer gravity of what had happened sank in. That guy, the one who had died crashing the plane, that was somehow the child they'd taken out of her. After throwing flames, lightning, ice, and whirlwinds, what's a little speed aging amongst friends? And Ryan had murdered a desperate girl. Strangled her. I could barely wrap my head around. This was inhuman. What kind of monster... That's when I was broken out of my musings by someone yelling in Eve's garden, the echoes making the sound even more unsettling.
I want some fucking service here.
Rodriguez. Maybe there's still one chance to get what Cohen wants without killing anyone.
Hey, hey! What's that guy got to do to...
Sorry about that, sir, I said quickly, straightening my apron. I'm afraid the war has taken its toll on the service, but I'm still here. What's your pleasure? I smiled as winningly as I could. He looked at me dubiously, then said, Whiskey, neat. Coming right up. Shall I open a tab for you, sir? He sat up a little bit. Yeah, decent of you. Now, I was no bartender, but I'd been around a few pubs to mimic the techniques. Besides, he didn't seem like a guy interested in mixed drinks. I set his drink down on a napkin. So, seeing as how things are slow, you have my undivided attention. Tell me your troubles, Mac. It's going. He's trying to kill me. It wasn't enough to the things that man made me do. Yeah, I heard about that. It's a tough break. As I talked, I started writing on a pad of paper for taking orders, praying that he wasn't so spliced up that he'd freak out like Silas did. What else can I get you? Another. Same. He wasn't slurring his words yet. Good. I needed him sober enough to... I left the pad on the table as I went to get the drink, hoping he'd glance at it and read the message I left for him. As I came back, he looked up at me and nodded ever so slightly. Thank Christ. I served him the drink, then stepped back as he drank deep, then set the drink down. Another. Same. He looked at me, then his glass. What? What? Rodriguez launched himself across the bar, grabbing me and hauling me over it, throwing me to the side and punching me as hard as he could. The first few punches had me seeing stars, but the fourth punch missed and he fell to the floor, lying on his side, foam coming from his lips. I pushed myself away and stood up. Cohen spoke again, and his words were nearly ecstatic. Now that was a performance. What did you do to him? Rat poison. I didn't feel like chasing him all over Fort Frolic. He was a lout, but he was vigorous, he said with a hint of admiration. Then his voice turned imperious again. Get the photo before he completely dries up. I want to say something sarcastic, but I was so close to finding Elizabeth now, I didn't want to risk everything I'd done so far for a moment's satisfaction. I simply took the picture and headed back to the atrium. Cohen, of course, loved to hear the sound of his own voice, prattling on about his legacy and his other testaments to his greatness while I put the fourth photo on display. There, only one left. Indeed, and I am a man of my word. The bathysphere of the Rapture Metro Station will take you to the final resting place of Fontaine's Folly. You will find the songbird there. Bring me her cold corpse, add it to my masterpiece, and I shall pledge all of Fort Frolic's resources to your support. Like Arcadia and the other locations you've conquered, Fort Frolic will be as safe as milk. But cross me, Angel, and I shall see to it you are imprisoned in purgatory. I nodded, checked my supplies, and headed for the bathysphere. Now all I had to do was figure out a way to outsmart Cohen. No, that was secondary. Finding Elizabeth was primary. I'll figure out the rest once I find her. The bathysphere trip sure took long enough. More than once I was starting to wonder if I was going to run out of air on the way over. Just when the air was starting to get thin, I saw the entrance to a structure that looked like someone sunk the Chrysler building. The lights were on, advertising housewares, and the machinery still seemed to work. The platform that lifted the bathysphere out of the water without any hitches. The door couldn't have opened soon enough for me, and I stumbled onto the platform. The air was surprisingly fresh. I was expecting it to be as stale as month-old bread, but it actually smelled nicer in here than it did in Arcadia. Probably the lack of rotting food, or just the eagerness for fresh air. I got out and looked around. Things looked newer here by comparison to the war-torn halls of Rapture. There was some damage here, but for the most part, the damage was minimal at best. Ads were still up, and a lot of the product was still on the shelves. Thanks to cool of the air, the store was almost perfectly preserved. But it felt so empty. I knew it was the wrong thing to do, but I still called out, Hello? Hearing the call bounce off the walls and the windows, going unanswered. Maybe the radio would work now. Surely I was far enough away from Cohen's jamming signal to get Elizabeth on the line. I pulled it out and dialed up her frequency, took a deep breath, then pressed the talk button. Elizabeth, are you out there? No answer. Elizabeth? Nothing. Not a sound. I felt like I was in the center of a ghost town. I thought to myself, Mark, find the will. Elizabeth's in here somewhere. You did not run this far in this marathon to trip on the finish line. I nodded, said aloud, hang on, Elizabeth.